It gives me great pleasure to introduce the president of the Council of Jehovah's Rabbis in general, Rabbi Jeffrey Mayfield. Before he comes up, I need to ask all of you to take your cell phone, push it off. No exception. Thank you very much.
Responds. Jewish memory transforms yesterday into today. Time is not and should not be a healer if one is truly sensitive and caring. And so this evening comes as a modest attempt to demonstrate that sensitivity and caring. To Jewishly remember the events of Gush Katif, to this engagement 3 years ago. We have brought together four distinguished individuals, each of whom have and remain deeply committed to the communities and people of Gush Katif, and we thank each of them for agreeing to speak to us tonight. Allow me then to introduce our first speaker, Frank Nasher of Aram Shalom Bo. Probably everyone here knows Aram Shalom Bo. But for those that may not, Rabbi Bo made Aliyah in 1984 after serving with distinction as the Rav of Young Israel of West Hempstead, New York. He founded Rabbi of Young Israel in Shabbat Zichron Yosef in Hanoi, where he served for 20 years. There's hardly a pulpit or a podium that Rabbi Gold has not spoken at, energized his audience with his lungs, with his ashkara, with his insight. It's about someone like Rabbi Gold that the Navi spoke when he said, Laman Tzion Lo Ech Hashem. The man in Yerushalayim, Loesh Kos, Rabbi Gold, does not keep silent. He is not quiet when it comes to Israel and when it comes to Yerushalayim. And his words, as they've always been in the past, are as relevant and as meaningful as I'm sure they will be. Rabbi Gold.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Bienenfeld. I feel humbled by that beautiful introduction, and I hope I'll be able to live up to the reputation that you say I have. This is a very painful gathering. The pain started 15 years ago, when in a burst of great euphoria, Oslo came upon the scene of the Jewish people. I think there were many of us who were incredulous, couldn't believe what was taking place. The architect of world terrorism and 40,000 of his fellow terrorists were going to be invited into Eretz Yisrael. I can't believe it. We saw the those who were eating hummus in Yericho. 100 years war over, the sun has risen. And we couldn't believe that it was happening. That great burst of euphoria has cost thousands of lives on both sides of the divide. And we are no closer to peace than we were 15 years ago. There was something that I said. Yes, in Hanov, the Shabbos after the unfortunate declaration of principles of Oslo was announced to the world. And I want to go back to that tonight. Our Sedra begins with Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the Jewish people, Acharei HaKoto et Sichon Melech Lamodi, after he had destroyed Sichon, king of the Amodi, Asher Yoshev B'Cheshbon, who lives in Cheshbon. This city that we've heard about before is now mentioned again. There's something about Sichon living in Cheshbon. So I want to take you back there. That was in Parshas Chukas. There are a number of psukim that are so difficult to understand. We wonder why in heaven's name the Torah have to write this. Torah says the following. Israel conquered all of the lands of Sichon, and they settled in Cheshbon, Ubechol Benotehi, in the city of Cheshbon, and all of the area around it. Ki Cheshbon ir Sichon Melech Hamodi, hi Cheshbon is the city of Sichon, king of the Amori. Vuhu Nilcham, he waged war with Melech Moab Erisho. He waged war against the first king of Moab, Vayikach et kol Arzo miyado, he took all of his land from him, Ad Arnon, until the river Arnon. Al Kain Yomru HaMoslim. Therefore, those who write parables, or those who are the balladeers who sing the songs of great victory, Al Kain Yomru HaMoslim, Bo Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon. Let the city of Sichon be built and established. The kind of words that we use about Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, Tibonavit Tikonen. And the Torah is telling us, Sichon? Ah! Tibonavit Tikonen, Ir Sichon, the city of Sichon. Ki Eish Yotzami Cheshbon, fire went out of the city of Cheshbon, Lehova, a flame, Mi Kiryat Sichon, from the metropolis of Sichon. Ochla Or Moab, Bale Bomas Arnon, it's consumed all of Moab. Eilecha Moab, woe unto you Moab, you've been lost, you've been destroyed. And the Sukkim go on and continue to talk about Cheshbon, 5, 6, 7 times. What's so important about Cheshbon? Why do we have to know about the battle of Sichon against the first king of Moab? What does it do for us? It seems to be a part of Torah that just... I mean, there must have been thousands of wars in ancient times. What's the significance of this war? And what are the balladeers singing about? It becomes even more difficult when one sees the Gemara says, Al Kain Yomru HaMoshlin. The word Moshlin comes from the word Moshal. But the Gemara uses it in a different way. Al Kain Yomru HaMoshlin, those who rule. Al Kain Yomru HaMoshlin, Elu HaMoshlin BiYitzram, those who rule over their passions and desires. Bo Cheshbon, the Pasuk says. What do the Moshlin tell us? Bo Cheshbon, make Cheshbono Shel Olam. Cheshbono Shel Olam is the great calculation of all of life. What is that calculation? The reward one receives for performing a mitzvah, weigh that against the loss one might incur by performing a mitzvah. And on the other hand, take a look at the benefit, in quotation marks, that accrues to somebody who does an aveva, and the loss. What's this all have to do with a pasuk about a city, Cheshbon, that was conquered by Sichon, and he took it in battle from the first king of Moab? It's all a mystery. What does it all mean? 50 years ago, I heard from my Rosh Yeshiva. I was then learning in Neri Yisrael in Baltimore. And I heard from my Rosh Yeshiva that the Yaakov Yitzhak HaLevi Rudamandich, at Tzadik Levracha, he said a pshat in this Gemara and in these Pesukim, but I'm going to take it a giant step further. He says the following. What does the Yetzer Hara have to learn from Cheshbon? He said, when Sichon and his forces came to the border of Moab, it was a little town inside Moab. The little town was called Cheshbon. Cheshbon was completely insignificant militarily, economically, socially. We would best describe it as a one-horse town. On the main street there was a local lockup, there was a saloon with sliding doors, and most probably there was a a general saw. Sichon was absolute, Chesba was absolutely insignificant. The high command of Moab gathered to decide, we're in the process of being invaded. Should we commit forces to defend Chesba? And of course there were voices who said that, defend Cheshbon. Cheshbon is a burden on us. What does it do with Cheshbon? It's insignificant, it doesn't mean anything militarily, politically, socially, economically. It doesn't mean a thing. We're not going to defend Cheshbon. You know what we're going to do? We're going to draw back our lines 20, 30 kilometers beyond Cheshbon. What he never spoke about, what my Rosh Shiva never spoke about, was what did they do with the people of Cheshbon. If I let my memory go wild, or maybe not too wild, they most probably gave them the option of leaving on their own, or being dragged out of Cheshbon, or remain there with the enemy. The end was, they drew back, and Sichon, king of the Amori, marched into that insignificant little flea-bitten town of Cheshbon without shooting an arrow. And he waited. You know what he did? He brought in men, material. He built Cheshbon, little insignificant Cheshbon. He built it into a major fortress. A mighty city, brought in all sorts of weaponry, not through tunnels, he brought it straight in overland. And you know what ended? The end was that Cheshbon became such a powerful metropolis that it brought down all of Moab. Ki eish yotzom be Cheshbon, fire went out of Cheshbon lehova, flames went out of the city of Sichon and destroyed all of Moab. What does that have to do with the Yetzer Hara? So the Rosh Hashiva said, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, doesn't come to a Jew who's a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs and tell him, eat Chazer on Yom Kippur. Nah. Go out and be Mechal Shabbos. Nah, that's not it. You know what he does? A little Lashon Hara. Not big Lashon Hara, just a little bit of Lashon Hara. And you know what? And then the fella does it. You know what? Now the Yetzer Hara waits. He has a beachhead. He's there. The time will come that he'll get into the next Aveda and the next, and before you know, the Yetzer Hara is going to consume the entire human being. My Hashiva was talking Musar. But it's not only the Nimshal that's important over here, the Mashal. That's why Torah told it to us. Torah told us that if you're going to abandon something, that will turn into a base for operations against you that could chas v'sholom destroy you entirely. When I said this 15 years ago, people thought I was out of my mind. We can bear testimony that these psukim in Torah that seem to be unimportant, insignificant, teach us nothing, are teaching us an extremely important lesson. You don't leave any place of Eretz Yisrael in the hands of an enemy. We see it. We see it. But I truly believe that our leadership and many of our people have not yet internalized the extent of the tragedy, the criminal tragedy of Gush Katif. They don't get it yet. We have our people running around hoping maybe to get a smile from Assad and give him the Golan Heights. A non-prime minister is running to Abbas to talk to him about what? They're all waiting. Everybody wants to be the father of the Palestinian state. the George Washington of the Palestinians say, Meshuggah Zaynin say, two states for two people is a mortal threat to the existence of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. Can't they see it? And then, of course, the profound tragedy of Jews casting Jews out of their homes in Eretz Yisrael. I can't begin to understand how it was done. I can't for the life of me understand how a Jew can do that to a fellow Jew. Most tragic act of treachery that Jews have ever done against fellow Jews. And we warned them and we said exactly what was going to happen. And it's all happening and even worse. But there was nobody listening. Do you know what it meant? It meant that unbeknownst to Moab, Cheshbon was the front line of the defense of all of Moab. For years they told us, we can't commit troops to Gush Katif. What are we sending troops to Gaza for? For those settlers? Those settlers were protecting Eretz Yisrael. And what continues on, unabated, the march of folly. The march of folly is not only continuing, it's a mad run of folly. There is a madness that has overtaken. A headlong rush to divest the state of Israel of its legitimate God-given lands to none other than their sworn enemies. The world is laughing at us. We have done what no other people in the world has ever done. And we think that we are the great purveyors of peace. We're going to bring peace. Two states for two people. Two states for two people. They don't even know that it's most probably by now it's four states for two people. A Hamastan, a Fatastan, a Jordan, and maybe some little land will remain over there for the Jewish people. What would have been unthinkable 15 years ago, who talked about it? Nobody said it. What was unthinkable has become thinkable. What was inconceivable has become conceivable. It's become policy. You know why? Because the country has been fed for years now, empty, meaningless, destructive slogans. Land for peace is absolutely meaningless. Nobody ever planned to give us peace for any land. It was a lie. It was always a lie, and it continues to be a lie. What would have been true is all the land for no peace. That might have been true. Not land for peace. Gosh, how many times has it been said by our leaders, Ein pitagon tzvai. There is no military solution. What do you mean there's no military solution? You would have told Roosevelt and Churchill, there's no military solution. The world would have been destroyed by now. But Roosevelt and Churchill didn't hear the Israeli wisdom of there's no military solution. They had their own slogan, and it was only two words, unconditional surrender. The worst, and the one that's going on right now before our very eyes, Ipuk Zekalach. Restraint is strength. Let them bring in for 6-7 years all sorts of katyushas and kasams, restraint. How many times were they ready to go back into Gaza? But thank God they restrained themselves. You know why they don't want to go back? Because they cannot admit that they made a terrible, tragic mistake. Not only empty slogans, empty words, I have to tell you, as chatoi my sins, I, I, maybe I shouldn't mention it publicly, but I read the Haaretz every morning. But I read it religiously. This morning, big banner headline: Israel warns Hezbollah, we will put an end to the smuggling of arms. If you've heard laughing coming from the north, it's Hezbollah laughing. Another threat. Another threat that will not be carried out. Following the tragic expulsion of 10,000 Jews from their homes in Gush Katif and the northern Shomron, and the absolutely criminal and shameful way in which they have been treated up until today, must bring into being a process of regret, repentance, reconstruction, and renewal. We can't live on slogans anymore. Empty slogans have caused such terrible damage. Edward R. Murrow once said, "Our major obligation is not to mistake slogans for solutions. They're not solutions." And if you want another one, and this may even be more meaningful now, Wendell Willkie said, "A good catchword can obscure analysis for 50 years. Land for peace, land for peace. Yeah, land for peace. But it's not true. Restraint is strength. It's not true. It's a lie." Right now, the greatest clear and present danger to the state of Israel is the leftist, defeatist, appeasement policies of the leadership. Those are still repeating the empty, discredited ideas as visions for the future. What comes to mind is a sentence in the keynote that we're going to say on Sunday. Hacharishu mimeni v'dabed adabedo v'yaver olayma. Hacharishu, be silent from before me. I'm going to say what I want. And who cares what's going to happen afterwards? We cannot have a leadership where one is vying with another to be the father of a Palestinian state. We cannot have leadership that calls for withdrawal, retreat, and flight. You know what they're doing? They're creating cheshbons all over the country. The north is a cheshbon. Gush Katif has become a cheshbon. What's important is that we have to emerge from here with an understanding that there's a great job to be done. Our first job, of course, is going to be to give whatever aid and assistance we can to those who were cast out of their homes in Gush Katif. And we have to be able to say from the rooftops, we have to be able to shout. The worst part of this disengagement, the whole policy behind it, the worst part is not it's vicious, it's evil. The worst part was it's absolute stupidity. There was nothing to recommend it. It was a stupid, dumb act by Klidili. Just one little recollection, because I think this recollection is important. Remember the day of the Havkanah in Kfar Maimon? There were 300 buses in the country that were full with people ready to go to to Kfar Maimon, and throughout the country the buses were stopped. A crushing act against democracy by somebody who wants to be our prime minister. A destruction, trampling democracy. I remember I couldn't believe what was happening. The police come into Hanover, 3 buses ready to go, full, and they take the driver's license away from the bus drivers. This is democracy. Do you know what they told us during the entire period before the disengagement? That this disengagement is going to make the country more Jewish and more democratic. And it was a lie. It crushed democracy. And we're not much more Jewish than we were before. But that day of Kfar Maimon, all of those who couldn't get to Kfar Maimon came out to the entrance to the city. I was standing with all my people from Har Nof near Ginot Sakharov, the entrance over there. 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it was such a hot day. Who appears on the highway? Rabbi Avram Shapira Zefet Tzadik Levracha. There were two people who were the most courageous, outspoken, fearless people. Rabbi Avram and Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu should have a refuah shleima. We miss him. He was a leader, the kind of leader that we need. Kind of leader. He was there. You can't imagine the emotion on the highway. Police, everybody was there. And we davened mincha with him. I'll never forget that mincha on the highway that day. We need leadership. We need Torah leadership. It has to be our policy to make cheshbono shel olam. Al kein yom ha-moshlim bo v'nasa cheshbono shel olam. And cheshbono shel olam tells us that we have to be ready to stand up and fight for every inch of Eretz Yisrael. We have to expose the nonsense, the lies, the so-called great policies for what they are. Nothing. Dangerous. Together with all of that, boy, do we have to pray to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that no harm shall come to any Jew in this country. We also have to hope and pray, and this is not a prayer in vain. We should in our lifetime see all the communities of Gush Katif be rebuilt again.
Rabbi Gold.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For living under your reputation.